You've shared your sources with us, and one thing is immediately gripping. These adventurers have walked into a world where the rules seem, well, different.
Mm-hmm.
One moment they're tangling with werewolves, you know, classic fantasy threat the next. Their maps are completely useless. It's that sudden shift, that geographic rug pull that really kicks off our deep dive today.
Exactly. We're looking at Not Curse of Strahd Session 5 from GM Wintermute's YouTube channel, and it's fascinating how quickly the familiar just gives way to the utterly strange.
Mm-hmm.
What we have here is a blend of the player's actions, the game master setting the scene, and the unfolding dialogue, all pointing to a central, unsettling question for them and for you following along.
Right.
Where have they landed and how on earth did they get out?
Right. They're coming off that werewolf encounter thinking they've found a relatively safe night in the woods.
Yeah, relatively.
Though thinking back, punctuated by persistent wolf howls, which in hindsight feels a little ominous.
Lovely foreshadowing, yeah.
Their immediate goal is simple. Find a town, resupply, maybe get their bearings. But reaching this place, Barovia, throws that simple goal into a whole new dimension of weird.
And as they take those first steps into Barovia, you can already sense that this isn't just a new location on a map. There's like a fundamental shift in the reality they're experiencing. What stood out to you about their initial impressions of this place?
Well, the arrival at the village is immediately atmospheric. The DM paints this incredibly vivid picture of perpetual twilight gray skies, the sun completely hidden, and this persistent mist just clinging to the valleys.
Spooky.
They're faced with a choice right away. Backtrack through zombie territory or press on towards this town. They chose the unknown, which, given what unfolds, was probably the more interesting path for them and for us.
Absolutely. And the details of their approach to the village are key, I think. The trees thin out, revealing this valley, and then this massive castle just dominates the horizon on a hill. One of the players even makes a remark about it, of incompensating, which, you know, beyond the humor, suggests this imposing, perhaps even insecure presence looming over everything.
Then they actually get into the village. The ground goes from muddy to these slick cobblestones, and the buildings are just, well, foreboding.
Mm.
Tall, dark, with boarded up windows, or just these gaping black holes where windows should be.
Yeah, not exactly welcoming.
But the truly unsettling part is the silence. It's midday. You'd expect some sign of life, right?
Yeah.
But it's eerily quiet. You hear about smoke from chimneys, so people are there, but they're unseen, unheard.
That pervasive silence is so effective in setting a tone of dread, isn't it? It's like the village is holding its breath, bracing for something.
Totally.
Their first interaction is at the Blood on the Vine Tavern, and that encounter really confirms that something is deeply amiss in Barovia.
Oh, the tavern is a character in itself. This large but clearly run-down building, a couple of fires kind of struggling to keep the gloom at bay.
Yeah.
And the sign.
Yeah, tell me about the sign.
Blood on the Vine. But the N in on is scratched over an F, so it used to say Blood of the Vine. It's a small detail, but it screams that something fundamental has been altered, maybe even corrupted, in this place.
And then the bartender, just this fudgy, uninterested figure, robotically cleaning glasses, grandma's attempts to get any information out of him about the local wine, the swine he serves, or even the undead at the gates are met with this wall of apathy.
It's so unnatural for someone in that role.
Right, completely.
Right. Grandma, being proactive, even tries to secure lodging, and the bartender is equally unhelpful. It's this consistent lack of normal human interaction, this refusal to engage, that really solidifies the feeling that they've stepped into somewhere profoundly wrong.
Exactly. It's like the villagers are either incapable or unwilling to offer any kind of normal assistance. But it's the next group they encounter, these gypsy-style men, that start to provide some truly disturbing answers, albeit indirectly.
Yes. These three men, described almost like Johnny Depp characters, initially just playing cards in the corner. But the moment Grandma mentions the trouble at the gates, they immediately tune in. Their nonchalance just drops for the first time.
What's fascinating here is the almost casual way they deliver information that should be earth-shattering to the adventurers. The offhand comment about their map being a few hundred years out of date.
Oh.
That's the first concrete indication that they are not where they think they are. But then comes the real gut punch. No one leaves Barovia.
It's delivered so matter-of-factly. And despite the adventurers' understandable confusion, their attempts to use their knowledge and reasoning, you know, a history check about Barovia and an intelligence check about a demiplane all failing.
Yeah, hitting dead ends.
These men just dismiss the idea of leaving as an impossibility. So their attempts to use their characters' knowledge, their background, were met with just
nothing.
further emphasizing their disorientation.
Their complete lack of concern for the adventurer's situation is chilling. It's as if this reality no one leaves is so ingrained for them that it's beyond question.
Mm-hmm.
Their suggestion to try the mercantile for a map only leads to another unsettling encounter with the shopkeeper, Bildrath.
Bildrath. Okay, he's the opposite of the bartender, almost unnervingly enthusiastic about customers.
Right. A real shift.
But his eagerness takes a very strange turn when they ask for a map to find a way out of Barovia.
Right. He doesn't offer a map of the surrounding lands of a way home. Instead, he presents them with a map of Barovia, essentially reinforcing the idea that this is their new inescapable reality.
And he echoes that sentiment. No one leaves Ferobia, this time adding the ominous explanation that the mist won't let you.
Best.
And his attempts to place Barovia geographically are just absurd. He references towns they've never heard of, but then he throws them a lifeline, a tiny breadcrumb of familiarity mentioning previous adventurers who spoke of the Sword Coast and Faron.
Ah, places they recognize.
Which are places they recognize. These fleeting mentions of their home realm are crucial, aren't they? They confirm they are somewhere alien, but also offer a sliver of hope that others have faced this.
Exactly. It's a reminder that their past is real, even if their present is so disorienting. Bildrath then introduces the concept of the Vistani, the gypsies, and how they seem to be the only ones allowed to leave. With permission from the master in the castle. This is the first hint of a controlling power in this land.
This master in the castle, whom Bildrath is clearly afraid to describe, immediately becomes a central figure, even in absentia. Who is this person, and what hold do they have over Barovia?
Good question. And the shopkeeper provides more pieces of the puzzle about the Vistani. They act as trade routes, they have a bar further up the street, and a larger encampment at a place called Tizerpool.
Okay, so there's hope there, maybe.
Maybe. He even sells them a map of Barovia at an outrageously inflated price, I might add, before revealing this bizarre corner of his shop dedicated to what he calls mob riots and nothing but pitchforks and torches.
That's weird. What's that about?
It's a really odd detail that hints at a history of unrest or fear within Barovia. Very strange.
That corner is such a strange, specific image. It definitely suggests a darker undercurrent to this seemingly quiet village. Naturally, the adventurers, desperate for answers and a way out, decide their next step is to find these Vistani.
Makes sense. Their visit to the Vistani at the local bar is met with outright laughter at the very suggestion of leaving Barovia.
Oh, come on.
But through the laughter, some more unsettling information emerges. The idea that others have left in spirit is a particularly grim turn of phrase, hinting at a fatalistic view of escape.
Left in spirit. Yeah, that doesn't sound good. But crucially, the Vistani at the bar confirm that they can leave. With the master's permission.
Right.
This establishes a clear power dynamic and a potential, albeit heavily controlled, route out for the adventurers. They're then directed to seek out Madame Eva at Tizerpool, who seems to be a figure of some importance among the Vistani.
The journey to Tizerpool is described as uneventful geographically, but the atmosphere remains heavy. The road devolves into a muddy path, reinforcing the sense of isolation.
Of course it is.
The arrival at the camp, though, is a stark contrast to the village.
Mm.
Colorful tents, music, the sounds of life. The Vistanis are welcoming, offering food and wine, a much-needed change from the villagers' coldness.
Okay, a bit of normalcy, finally.
A little bit. But even these seemingly more worldly Vistani can't pinpoint their location relative to the adventurer's home, echoing the earlier confusion. And then they share a chilling tale.
Oh.
The story of a wizard who dared to oppose the devil Strahd and met a gruesome end at the hands of Count Strahd von Zarovich, a vampire who has apparently ruled this land for centuries.
Whoa. Okay, so Strahd, that's the name. Count Strahd von Zarovich, a vampire ruling for centuries.
This is a massive info dump, isn't it?
Yeah.
We finally get the name, the title, the nature, the duration of his rule.
And the Vistani's okay with this.
Their apparent loyalty, or at least acceptance, of Strahd's rule, along with the fact that their ability to leave is contingent on his permission, really underscores his absolute power here.
Wow. Okay. And then comes the encounter with Madame Eva.
The fortune-telling scene? Yeah. It feels almost stereotypical in her tent setup, but it's immediately made unsettling by her dramatic entrance and the fact that she knows each of the adventurers by name.
Wait, she knows their names?
Knows their names, even details from Grandma's past that are, let's just say, embarrassing.
Awkward.
It establishes her as someone with significant, perhaps supernatural insight.
Definitely.
Exactly. It moves beyond a simple reading and feels like a targeted briefing. The tarot card reading itself is a sequence of cryptic prophecies. The first card points to Mad Dog's crypt beneath blackened bones within the castle for knowledge of the ancients.
In the castle. Strahd's castle.
Strongly implies they'll need to venture into Strahd's domain, yeah.
Okay. Card two.
The second suggests a source of good and protection. A holy symbol, located in a small castle beneath a mountain, guarded by amber giants.
Amber giants. That sounds significant and dangerous.
Mm-hmm. The third card speaks of a weapon of power, a sword of sunlight, linked to a kneeling woman, the Rose of Great Beauty, and the Master of the Marsh, which they identify as the area of Perez on their map.
A sword of sunlight.
Okay.
That sounds useful against a vampire. And a specific location, the Marsh of Perez.
Right. The fourth card is about a helper, Strahd's enemy, but with the stark warning that they must face the evil alone.
Alone. That's not very helpful for a helper. Isolating and ominous.
Very. And the final card reveals the location of their ultimate enemy, a secret vault, the Vault of Temptation, atop his Tower of Treasure, guarded by a woman of great beauty.
Strahd's tower, presumably. And another woman of great beauty. Interesting.
And Madame Eva's refusal to redeal the cards emphasizes the weight and finality of these pronouncements. This is their path.
The adventurers, understandably, latch onto the idea of finding the sword first. No giants, no obvious vampire to deal with initially. Smart move.
Seems logical. And the Vistani provide more context about the Marsh of Perez, a tragic history involving Strahd, a peasant girl named Marina, a flooded village, now abandoned and likely haunted.
Okay, so the Marsh has baggage, lots of it,
yeah,
tied to Strahd directly.
They also offer limited information about the Amber Temple, location of the holy symbol, maybe, located south of Perez in cold mountains, built by mages, and rumored to contain evil lore, emphasizing the need for winter gear.
Evil lore, cold mountains, amber giants. Yeah, that sounds like a challenge.
Definitely paints a picture of the challenges ahead. The Vistani's offer of shelter for the night, the return of the pervasive mist, and the unsettling sound of wolves howling in the distance brings their first day in Barovia to a truly ominous close.
Just one day. Wow. Okay, so the next day dawns uneventfully at the Vistani camp, but the need for cold weather gear prompts a return to the charming village.
Back to Bildreth, who, back in his role as overly enthusiastic shopkeeper, tries to exploit their need with inflated prices. Of course.
Naturally. But Grandma, through some persuasive means involving a gem, manages to acquire what they need. Coats, hats, scarves, rope, tents.
Good old Grandma. Resourceful.
Notably, silver items remain scarce, which in a land ruled by a vampire feels significant, doesn't it?
Very significant, yeah. Good luck finding silvered weapons.
Their decision to stay another night at the tavern sets the stage for their encounter with Ismark.
Ah, Ismark. A young man sitting alone, identified as the son of the local burgomaster. He approaches them with a desperate plea.
Let me guess. He needs help.
Bingo. To help him get his adopted sister Irina to the fortified town of Valaki for protection from Strahd, who has become fixated on her.
Strahd is fixated on her.
Why?
An adopted sister.
Right, okay. The phrase we've heard repeatedly, no one leaves Barovia, even comes up in the context of just moving between settlements within Barovia.
Seriously, even town to town is hard?
Apparently so. But Valaki isn't drastically out of their way, and Ismark's explanation that most Barovians are too terrified to attract Strahd's attention by helping makes perfect sense, given the oppressive atmosphere we've seen.
Yeah, that tracks. Fear rules this place.
The adventurers, perhaps motivated by a bit of rebellion against their own imprisonment, agree to help.
Good for them. The arrival at the burgomaster's mansion is a stark visual representation of Strahd's influence and the fear he inspires, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. The dilapidated state of the property, rusting fence, twisted gates, overgrown grounds, claw marks, fire damage, boarded up windows with what are described as evil omens, all paint a picture of a place under siege and now abandoned to decay.
Grim. Ismark's hesitant call to Irina and her equally cautious response from inside underscore the pervasive fear.
And then there are the tracks outside.
Right. The discovery of wolf paw prints mixed with human footprints outside is a particularly unsettling detail that raises all sorts of questions.
What is that about?
Who knows? Irina's story confirms the immediate danger they face. She reveals she's been bitten by Strahd twice.
Twice.
The villagers shun her, and her father, the burgomaster, lies dead in a coffin, awaiting a burial that no one dares to perform.
So the burgomaster is dead. Died recently.
Seems so. Even Grandma's attempt to use a magical remove curse cookie on Irina has no effect, highlighting the potent nature of whatever afflicts her.
A magic cookie? Worth a shot, I guess, but no dice.
Irina explains that the nightly attacks on their home by wolves and other creatures only ceased after her father's death 3 days prior.
Okay, that's interesting. The attacks stopped when he died. Why?
And the added layer of mystery. Her lack of memory about her early childhood or how she even came to Barovia deepens the intrigue surrounding her.
So she doesn't know her own past. Another puzzle piece.
The adventurers, in a moment of genuine compassion, decide to help bury the Burgomaster before continuing their own uncertain path.
A decent thing to do. So as the session concludes, you can see how densely packed it is with mystery and foreboding. The isolated nature of Barovia is undeniable. Strahd's presence looms large. The Taroka prophecies offer a tantalizing but cryptic guide.
And the immediate need to protect Irina adds a strong personal stake to their journey. It's not just about escaping anymore.
Exactly.
And for you, the listener, consider this. What are your initial theories about Strahd's obsession with Irina? Why hasn't he simply taken her?
Good question. And what do you make of those disturbing mixed wolf and human tracks? What could that mean?
And how do you think the seemingly random clues from the Taroka cards will start to connect as they navigate this terrifying realm?
Looking ahead, their immediate priorities are clear. Burying the Burgomaster, a solemn task that underscores the bleakness of Barovia, and then embarking on the journey towards the Marsh of Perez and potentially the Amber Temple.
Now, with the added responsibility, the added complication of ensuring Irina's safety, it really makes you wonder, is Barovia a prison without escape? Or is there a hidden key to be found within the strange details they've already uncovered?
And what role will these unlikely heroes play in the dark tapestry of this count's ancient domain? Food for thought.